because he had unique skills.
Just go get the quarterback. I felt sorry for some of those poor tackles that came in and had to go against him because they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Lights out.
Sacking the cornerback is just like you devastate a city, or you cream a multitude of people. I mean, it's just like you put all the offensive players in one bag, and I just take a baseball bat and beat on the bag. So each time he came over there, I tried to tear his damn head off.
Let's play some football. Let's play some football.
The pressure is on. This is Off the Edge on Tide 100.9.
Focus on what you want to do, what you want to accomplish. Think about that. Don't think about how you feel, how tired you are, how hot it is. You got to push yourself on the field when you're playing football.
It's my honor to present the National Championship Trophy to Coach Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide.
To me, this is the ultimate team. All these guys bought into everything they needed to do to be the best players that they could be. There's more togetherness on this team than almost any team that we've ever had. And they had to overcome and persevere so much adversity through this season, and they've done it magnificently. And I'm so proud of this group for what they've been able to accomplish in going undefeated and winning the national championship.
Streaming live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and the Tide 100.9 app. Here is your host of Off the Edge, Jacob Harrison.
Hello there. Good morning. Welcome in to Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. Jacob Harrison here with you, digital managing editor at Town Square Media Tuscaloosa. Mason Woods, Michael Bronner, Hunter Brantley helping us out on a Tuesday, as they are often to do this spring. We'll get into more of my mock draft here in just a little bit, about 11 minutes. We'll talk with our friend AJ Spur of Roll Tide Wire as we count the minutes, the seconds to the NFL draft. Real quick, do want to tell you about Alabama Vintage, alabamavtg.com. Check them out online. You can spend $60 and get free shipping on your order. There's everything that you could possibly think of for an Alabama Crimson Tide fan, whether it's commemorative t-shirts, jackets, hats, shoes. It's all there. The memorabilia as well. And as I mentioned, we're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft. Maybe you want to get yourself a vintage jersey. There's no better place to find one that is going to not only fit well, but also still be in a pristine condition. You'll feel good wearing it. You know, it'll have some honor behind it. These things have been taken care of, and now Charlie's turning them back out to you for you to enjoy. So go check them out in store, 2210 University Boulevard, under the Crimson Awning across from City Hall in the heart of downtown T-Town. Now, as far as my mock draft goes yesterday, we spent most of the time talking about the top 10. We got to J-Mo, and that was kind of the end of the conversation on that, as we took some phone calls and so on. So I did want to kind of run back through a couple of key pieces in here. Of course, these don't necessarily impact the Alabama Crimson Tide, but I can kind of use these as, these are also landing places that you could see J-Mo and Evan Neal go. And then, well, if we've got time before we talk with AJ, we'll get into where some of the mid-round guys start to creep up in this mock draft. But I think, first and foremost, talking about Evan Neal, obviously, now, listen, yesterday I was watching some of Pat McAfee's clips, saw a moment where he was talking with Ian Rappaport. Rappaport says that the Jaguars are down to 4 picks. or four prospects that they would be willing to pick with the first overall pick. And that would be Aiden Hutchinson, the odds-on favorite, Trayvon Walker, Ike Ekwonu, the offensive lineman from North Carolina State, and Evan Neal. Evan Neal is still in play here. And by the way, while we're talking about these odds, Evan Neal is plus 2,000. So do the math. You don't have to bet a lot to make a lot if Evan Neal is indeed the first overall pick. I see Michael Bronner's gears are turning in there. His wallet's on fire. He's willing to make the bet. But as it stands for Trayvon Walker in that same space, talking about the same kind of situation with the Pat McAfee show, McAfee is sponsored by FanDuel. So FanDuel top bookmaker comes on and says, well, we made Trayvon Walker the odds-on favorite because the gamblers that often take money from us and win were starting to put their money on Trayvon Walker because it was a good bet. If Aiden Hutchinson is way ahead as the favorite, like, you're not going to bet on that guy. So how do you make money? You bet on the guy that is a possibility and move forward there. So, yes, Las Vegas always finds a way to win. You know, they'll make Trayvon Walker the favorite, and then you lose, and, you know, it all works out. They always win. So what I mean by all of that is that doesn't – just because the odds moved, it didn't move because of information. It moved because of trends, and that's understandable, and oftentimes that works out. But I'm not convinced that Trayvon Walker is the first overall pick. I am more convinced that it is Aiden Hutchinson. That is the pick that I made in my mock draft. I don't think Evan Neal is completely off the board, but I do wonder if maybe the Jags are going to be making a decision here that they are going to soon regret. Not later regret, soon regret. They only have one guaranteed year of Cam Robinson as their left tackle. And on the other side is another problem. Do you really want to have to revisit this problem later? It seems like they're putting themselves in a position where they'll have to, but they'll never have to look at the pass rusher situation ever again. So trying to delve into the minds of NFL franchises is not as easy as some people want to make it seem to be through their mock drafts and their analysis. Other places you're going to definitely hear some noise for, especially as the minutes continue to clock down. The Houston Texans still make a lot of sense. Though he wouldn't be playing left tackle, he would be playing right tackle there. Same thing for the New York Giants. The Carolina Panthers are a team that is going to continue to build noise because we're continuing to hear, and I think this is just to scare the Steelers off. I really think this is just a smokescreen that exists to scare the Steelers off from trading up, and I would like to think that doesn't matter to the Steelers at all. They're going to do what they're going to do. But the idea that no quarterbacks would go in the first 19 picks, like Todd McShay said yesterday, if that were the case and Carolina is telling the truth there, that is a strong, strong landing spot for Evan Neal. You also, again, have the Seattle Seahawks, which is where I have him landing. I don't think he makes it out of the top 10. If he does, I think the Washington Commanders could be a team that looks at him. I think the Saints could trade up and take a look at him. The Vikings there as well, if they stay put at 12. Again, like, you're not going to see him fall that far, though. It's just not going to happen. Evan Neal is one of the most well-respected players, most highly thought-of players in this draft. So it kind of is where it is on that. I think 10 is the ceiling for JMO, though. I don't think you're going to see him go very much higher than that unless the Atlanta Falcons are truly, truly insane. If I'm the Falcons, I can't not look at one of these top DBs and pull the trigger on that and just start to build something. Because all the top pass rushers are gone. Like, if Trayvon Walker was there, I think that'd be perfect value and fit. But if Kyle Hamilton, Derek Stingley, or Sauce Gardner, any of those guys are there, J-Mo's off the board. Don't take a wide receiver. But as far as the fact that everybody wants Jameson Williams, everybody. Like, we hear late yesterday that's what the Eagles want to do at 15. Like, bro, he's not going to be there. I keep seeing Alabama Saints fans that are pulling for J-Mo to go to the Saints. He's not going to be there at 16. You know, they could trade up and get him. Like, that's fine. But every team between 10 and 15 wants Jameson Williams. So it's just a matter of who pulls the trigger or who trades up, who gets ahead of the Jets maybe to make sure that that happens. So not a lot of craziness when it comes to J-Mo. I still think, you know, it's a possibility that he's the first wide receiver selected. I think it's a stronger possibility than a lot of people believe. I'm not as fazed by his ACL as other people are. They're just more conservative and more fearful of that situation. I think you look at what's going on there, though, and you see a guy that's dynamic enough to pull off what Henry Ruggs pulled off, because he's a better football player than Henry Ruggs was. So if we're talking about Garrett Wilson being a lot like Jerry Jeudy and Drake London being at least the same respected caliber as CeeDee Lamb, and yet Henry Ruggs went ahead of both of those guys, and Jameson Williams can do the same thing and have a much faster start to his career than Henry Ruggs did, and definitely a longer one. But as it stands right now, those two guys are the only ones that are going in the first round. So where, how soon after day one, how soon into day two, the second and third rounds, should we expect to start hearing some Alabama names? Again, not a lot of Alabama names in this draft to begin with. But as it stands, like, a lot of guys are in the back half. Like, we talk about Slade Bolden, Chris Allen, Chris Owens not likely to be drafted, Daniel Wright not likely to be drafted. So when do you, where is that middle ground where you actually feel comfortable you're going to hear a lot of names? Well, I think the second and third round is when you're going to hear almost all of those names go off the board, except for Josh Job. I think the odds are more likely that a Chris Allen and Slade Bolden go undrafted and they choose where they want to go. I think that's Slade Bolden's best possibility, unless the Patriots say that they're going to use a draft pick. But if the Patriots know that he wants it so badly, they might get to the seventh round because they know he's not going to get selected and say, well, we're not going to use a pick on you. We're going to get you afterwards if you want to come here. Well, he already knows that's the answer. So the Patriots get two players in that situation rather than just one, right? You're going to wind up with the same number of players, but you're able to take advantage of who you want and who you have a little bit more effectively in that situation. I think it's very early on in the second round that you're going to hear Jameson Williams' name. Now, I've got him falling to 51. The Patriots trade up above the Steelers to take John Metchie. I think the Patriots like John Metchie. Here's the thing. He's not making it past 52. I'm going to tell you right, the Steelers love John Metchie. The Steelers would draft John Metchie in a heartbeat. So he's not making it past that. Early on, I think there's still, like, it's always funny, those first eight picks of the second round is just a bunch of guys that should have went first round. So teams tend to trade up into that space to take those very talented guys, even though they won't get the fifth year option on them. But I mean, listen to the names that I have going those first eight picks: Lewis Seen, Nakobe Dean, Arnold Ebiketti, Nick Benito, Kair Elam, Bernard Raymond, Trevor Penning, Tyler Smith, Boye Mafe, Christian Watson, David Ajabo, Jahan Dotson, Jalen Petrie. All those guys could all go in the first round. Almost all of them. You got to switch a lot of guys out. I mean, obviously, only 32 guys can be first-round picks, but all of those names are guys that I've seen entertained in that space. So it would be a tad bit harder for John Metchie to put his name in that space because, again, I named two wide receivers there that are bona fide first-round picks that just so happen to fall out because of the trends in my mock draft. And Metchie's not going ahead of either of those guys. So then you're at pick 45. So now, like, the second round kind of really begins. And it's just a couple of picks later that John Metchie's name is called. So he's not going to have to wait very long on day two. Now, as for the rest, I think it's a bit more of a toss-up. It depends. If there's a run on linebackers, that's a good thing for Christian Harris. If they're spread out like they end up being in my mock draft, then he's going to have to wait until the third round and relatively middle of that. I had him fall all the way to pick 80. That's the lowest I've ever seen Christian Harris fall in any of my mock drafts. I had Fedarian Mathis. He fell to 66 to play for the Detroit Lions, and that's the lowest he's fallen in a good long while in mine as well. Now, that's right at the start of the third round, so there's still chances for these guys, and this is when, you know, second and third rounders, that's way harder to predict than the first round. And first round's already nearly impossible on its own scale, so As it stands, those are going to be the first three guys you hear their names. Then it'll be a mixture of whether Jalen Armour Davis, Brian Robinson, got those two guys trying to sneak into that third round. Fourth round, probably a bit more likely for both of them. I had them sneak in, had to get their names included and put them in landing spots that make sense because their value is still technically right there as well. Josh Jobe will be the guy that's kind of in between all of that, between JAD and B-Rob and the undrafted guy. So big mystery as to how far he falls because he's got a lot of tools, but a lot of those tools tend to get him in a lot more trouble than they do give him a lot of chances to be successful. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk with our friend AJ Spurr, get his thoughts on the NFL draft, some NIL stuff as well. All next here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Forecast a clearing sky this afternoon, much cooler today, the high 71. Clear tonight with the low at 43. Tomorrow and Thursday, a good supply of sunshine both days with a warming trend. The high tomorrow is 76. For Wednesday, the high 81. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 65 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
We aren't going anywhere. Off the Edge is available in the podcast center on Tide100.9.com.
Yeah, Miami, South Beach, bringing the heat, can y'all feel that, can y'all feel that, jig it out, Here I am in the place where I come let go. In Miami, the base and the sunset low. Every day like a Mardi Gras. Everybody party all day. No work, all play.
Back here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide. Hear the Will Smith music. It's a good thing. It means we're talking with AJ Spurs. Nobody is in any range to be slapped. It's all good. We're all safe here, and we're going to talk some football, some NFL drafts, some NIL with our good friend AJ Spurr, the site editor of Roll Tide Wire, the USA Today affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide. AJ, what's going on, man? How you doing?
No complaints on my end. Glad to be brought back for another week here on Off the Edge, and I'm excited for the draft and love talking some picks that I know I will not even come close to getting correctly.
Hey, I'm in the same boat. I feel, as soon as I finished the first round of my final mock, I was like, wow, I feel really good about that. And then I knew, like, it's not even going to be close to that because this is the most unpredictable draft I can remember. It's Tuesday. We don't know who the first overall pick is. That is incredibly rare. Last year, the first four picks were super easy to predict. This year, we don't even know if Evan Neal is going top three, top five, or top 10, or if he even falls out of it. So I want to start there with the big guy, the left tackle. One of the best that we've ever seen here in Tuscaloosa, and the first real shot that this program has had at a first overall pick since Andre Smith back when the Nick Saban era started. It seems like the Jags are probably out. He's part of that final four, but it seems more and more likely that it's Aiden Hutchinson or Trayvon Walker. Is that a mistake you think that the Jags will soon regret if they do pass on Evan Neal as the first overall pick?
I do, and let me tell you something. This goes beyond just Evan Neal. This has to do with just the Jaguars not selecting either Evan Neal or Okonwu. I think, you know, when you have Trevor Lawrence, which heading into your second season, you're getting Travis Etienne back, you're hoping, okay, this is the real start of, you know, seeing a rebuild in process. Obviously, there's issues on both sides of the ball for the Jaguars, but, you know, you're going to lose Trevor Lawrence sooner rather than later, whether it be due to injury, whether it be because the fans give up on him or coaching staff gives up on him or the players do. So you want to protect him. You want to protect the offense. Let's be honest, that's the moneymaker if we're talking about offense and defense at the end of the day. Aiden Hutchinson is, you know, someone who a lot of people either love or they hate. It seems to be more hate rather than love, especially when you look back on him traveling to New York for the Heisman ceremony. There were a lot of people questioning why he was even there. There are people questioning why he's even considered top five, let alone number one overall. So this Aiden Hutchinson, number one overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars, doesn't make a lot of sense to me, nor does it seem to a lot of people. But Jaguars going anything other than Neal or Okonwu in number one overall is a mistake, in my opinion, that they will very soon regret, even if Aiden Hutchinson does pan out to be a stellar pick and a stellar player overall.
It would be interesting, though, because there was a guy who played the same position as Aiden Hutchinson who had more first-place votes for the Heisman than Hutchinson did but didn't get to go to New York, and that's Will Anderson, who would be the unequivocal first overall pick if he were in this class. And I don't think, you know, maybe our bias would be able to chill out a little bit more if it was Will Anderson instead of Aiden Hutchinson. I know we're all pretty volatile towards the Michigan guy. But still, like, you look at the way the Jaguars offseason has gone, they spent a lot of money on the offense and next to nothing on the defense. So it was anticipated they'd build the defense through the draft. And that makes a lot of sense. But you've only got Cam Robinson for 1 year. You're going to be right back in the same position next year, picking in the top 10. Do you really want to take a ninth overall offensive tackle instead of a first overall? You try not to see the future that way, but you can't help it when you're on the outside. But if that's the case, he doesn't go to Jacksonville. I've got him mocked to the Seattle Seahawks at 9. Is there another landing spot that you would like to see Evan Neal play in for the future where he's selected this Thursday in the NFL draft?
Well, there are two spots right now that are significantly below where you have him. I think Neal goes before Icky overall, and I know it depends on who you're asking. You could flip-flop him as OT1 and OT2, but either third overall to the Houston Texans. They seem to like Davis Mills at quarterback. Mm-hmm. This upcoming season is going to be a massive tryout for him. So giving him tools to succeed up at the line, I think, are going to be crucial to properly evaluating him. Hint, hint, something the Dolphins didn't do with Tua Tagovailoa for the last 2 years. And then beyond the Texans, I think the one that really does make the most sense, given the team as a whole, especially the position their quarterback is in, and that's got to be the New York Giants. Daniel Jones is right now make or break, and I hate using that term because I hear it nonstop with Tua. But it's true. You have a pretty strong quarterback class coming up in 2023. So go ahead and do what you can to help Daniel Jones succeed. And if you're not satisfied with what he does out on the field in 2022, you know, at least you've got a somewhat decent offensive line to protect whoever you're willing to bring in next draft in 2023.
And you know, the thing with the Texans is obviously Neal wouldn't play left tackle, he'd play right tackle. It'd probably be the same with the Giants too. But if I'm the Texans, if I'm Davis Mills, I love the idea of having Laremy Tunsil and Evan Neal be my bookend tackles. I don't think you can ask for a better combination coming out of this draft than that situation right there. So Davis Mills would at least be able to stand upright and throw the ball to God knows who, but at least you'd be given a good opportunity to not be injured throughout the season. Let's move on to Jameson Williams. I think he's top 10. I think there's no reason not to at least have some type of anticipation that he could be the first wide receiver selected. You look at the trends of how the NFL tends to view these extremely fast guys. The fact that Henry Ruggs went ahead of Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb, who are both as an entire prospect better than he was, even without the benefit of hindsight. What would your shock level be if he is the first receiver selected on Thursday night?
You know, probably next to nothing, because it's within the realm of possibilities to people that, you know, closely follow draft rumors, reports, you know, follow along throughout the combine, the off season, seeing what these different receivers offer. And, you know, I was going to mention before you hit on it, Henry Ruggs going before both CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, who at the time, both Jeudy and Lamb were seemingly in a fight for, you know, wide receiver one in the 2020 NFL draft. And lo and behold, pick number 12 rolls around and the Raiders take Ruggs, which is a few picks before Jeudy went at 15, and even more before CeeDee Lamb ended up being taken by the Dallas Cowboys. Jameson Williams is a tall, speedy wide receiver that can run amazing routes. I mean, he's kind of a perfect blend of Ruggs, Judy, even Waddle with his ability to take a short pass deep. I think any team that takes him is going to get an absolute superstar, not to mention what came out just 2 days ago with his recovery update. He's posting videos of himself now running. He's doing agility work. I mean, being only a few months removed from ACL surgery and being able to do what he's doing right now is insane. So I have no doubt in my mind he'll be ready by week one of the 2022 NFL season and probably even preseason or training camp. And he'll probably be limited in that aspect. But point is, I don't think teams are going to be taking his injury history into account when drafting. So, you know, people are talking about Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Treylon Burks, and Jameson Williams just kind of floating around there as a leftover wide receiver in the first round that maybe somebody in the 20s can pick up. And I don't think that's the case. I don't know about top 10, but top 15 is 100% a legitimate possibility.
Yeah, I think top 15 is a no matter what. Doesn't matter how many receivers go ahead of him. I think my shock level will be determined based off of, okay, Garrett Wilson ahead of him, I get it. Drake London, you probably could have made a better decision there. And then it's how far after Drake London is he. But I see him going to the Jets. That's where I mocked him. I think it makes a lot of sense there with the strong arm of Zach Wilson, who's got a good offensive line ahead of him, just needs that deep threat weapon to take advantage of, take the top off of opposing defenses. Not many guys in the AFC East that can even cover that kind of guy. You know, there's Tre'Davious White, there's Xavier Howard there with your Dolphins, but, you know, you got to cover somebody, and you've got to have the speed to be able to do it. Good luck with J-Mo. Realistically, though, and you mentioned it, anywhere that he goes, anywhere would take him. Everybody in this league loves Jameson Williams and wants him, but there is kind of that space between maybe picks 8 and 15 that he could realistically go. Where would you like to see him land, Jameson Williams, this Thursday?
There are a lot of mocks I've seen having him go here, but pairing him alongside Devontae Smith and seeing what Jalen Hurts can do with Jameson Williams, I think that would be an amazing offense. You have two super electric wide receivers, and not to mention, Jalen Hurts can take off at any moment. So while everyone's worried about, you know, deep threat wide receivers over there, Jalen Hurts can always work the field himself. So I think that would be a great fit for him. I think it is a needed position for the team. And overall, I would just love to see it.
I wouldn't be shocked if he does get past the Jets, that the Washington Commanders get a deal they absolutely cannot refuse for that 11th overall pick, whether it be from the Chiefs or the Eagles themselves or just anybody that is just dying to get their hands on a Jameson Williams. I asked you about the shock level if J-Mo isn't the first receiver selected. So this one's kind of a joke, but at the same time, it's pretty serious. You know, we got our resident Patriots fan over there in the control room. Shock level if by the end of the weekend, Slade Bolden isn't a New England Patriot.
I would question everything. I would question life.
Piqued my interest for 1 second, and then I was out.
is that not a possibility for you?
It's a 100%.
I guess it's a possibility. It's just, you know, it's the easy narrative to talk about, I guess.
It's too perfect for it not to work. You know, some stories write themselves. And I think, you know, front cover to back cover, that one's already been written and is being published as we speak.
The paperwork is in the mail. The reverend has signed it. The bride's just got to walk down the aisle and then say their IDs.
See, I can't wait for it not to happen just so I can, like, just so everyone will shut up about
but
it.
But see, that's the thing. It's funny either way. But I will say, me and Mason, we witnessed a moment at the pro day. Bill Belichick just watching on in awe as Slade Bolden ran a ridiculously fast three-cone drill. It's going to happen. We're talking with AJ Spur at Spur FM on the Twitter account, site editor for Roll Tide Wire, the USA Today affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide here on Off the Edge. I'm Jacob Harrison. This is Tide 100.9, your home for Alabama sports. I've got one ridiculously unfair question for you after that softball underhanded 20-mile-an-hour that can go out of the park. This one's pretty unfair. And it's completely hypothetical, so I'm glad your name's not Nick Saban. You can use the services of either of these three players, Christian Harris, Fedarian Mathis, or Brian Robinson. You have the 75th overall selection. You can be whatever team you want to be. Just you have the possibility, the realistic chance to draft all three of them, and they would all fit your team. Which one are you adding to your roster?
So Fedarian Mathis, Brian Robinson, and Christian Harris?
Yep.
At 75 overall. Oh, gosh. I think Christian Harris is probably going to be best value at that, you know, at 75 overall. But I love Fedarian Mathis, and I think he's gone before 75, too. So if he falls to 75, I got to take Big Phil.
I think that's fair. I like it. And I asked Mason the same question because I was like, this is just not a fair question at all. I gotta bounce it off of you first. And he said the same thing about Christian Harris probably being the better value. And in my mock draft, Harris fell to 80. So and Mathis went at 66. B-Rob went much later. But if you need a running back, I can't think of a better option to be your second bell cow kind of guy that just runs it up the middle and busts some heads. But when you're talking about like the physical value of a Christian Harris, but the leadership value of a Fedarian Mathis, and you're at 75 overall, there's just a crazy amount of value there. And the question more so serves the fact that these guys just, they're going to make whichever team drafts them just incredibly happy. You know, like everybody celebrates the first round pick. You know, you get to the third round and everybody just kind of claps like, yeah, we got a guy that we liked. I think once the dust settles on these guys' selections, those teams are going to be extremely proud and doing more than just clapping. They're going to be hugging each other.
Oh, absolutely. And I think this draft specifically, you talk about earlier how hard it is to put together a first-round mock draft. And let's just be honest. At the end of the day, it's probably because a first-round class here isn't as strong as recent drafts that we've seen. And that's, you know, no knock on the players, but it's the truth. There aren't a set group of players that stand above the rest. There are not 32 players that are clearly better than any player that's going to go in the sixth round following. So if we talk about second, third round guys, I mean, you may even want to stretch into day three a little bit. Day number four, you're going to get high value players in a later round for the sole purpose of maybe being overlooked because of media hype on players like, you know, Aiden Hutchinson, Drake London, some of these guys that maybe aren't all too impressive when you watch them, but because their names are being thrown out there so often, you just associated them with being some of those extremely top tier prospects for the NFL. And Brian Robinson is a perfect example of that. I think 75 is really early on Bryce Robinson, especially when you think about who's in this draft. There's Kenneth Walker, there's Breece Hall, there's Isaiah Spiller. And I really do think Brian Robinson is going to end up being a fifth, a sixth round guy, which is fine. There are a lot of guys that are from the seventh round that end up making active rosters just because they can prove themselves. And being a Nick Saban product, you know, Brian Robinson has the mentality, as we've seen. He was there for 5 years before starting as a running back. He waited his turn. He paid his dues. I think, you know, all these players, but especially Brian Robinson, is going to be able to, you know, take what's given to him and make the absolute most of it. And the NFL front offices and coaches are definitely going to take notice.
Yeah, I think B-Rob's probably one of the very few guys that you know is not going to go early. You know, he might be a triple-digit selection. But you just know, like you have this gut feeling, or at least I do, that it doesn't matter where he goes, unless he goes to a team that has two or three backs that are kind of established. But wherever he goes as a rookie, like he's going to make some sort of James Robinson type impact where it's like, oh, wow, oh, he can play in the NFL. It doesn't matter that he's not as fast as everybody else. He's got the grit, determination, and the skills to be able to get the job done. So I'm excited to see where all three of those guys land. Moving off the draft more so to NIL, the High Tide Collective is now a thing. Is this, you know, Nick Saban talked about how it's something that kind of helps preserve the fairness of the entire team. You know, everybody gets the same medical equipment and treatment. Everybody gets the same dietary regimens. And now everybody gets the same exact opportunities in NIL. Even if you're, you know, the lowest guy on the totem pole on the roster, you can go to High Tide Collective and they'll help you get something done for your NIL. Is this a positive step forward in the maturation of NIL or just something else completely different?
I think in a world of anarchy that is NIL in collegiate athletics, Nick Saban is taking it upon himself and the program to, you know, stand above the rest and have some sort of structure, have some sort of order. And, you know, sure, this is great for the players, but at the end of the day, Jacob, let's remember, everything Nick Saban does has a purpose, and it's either to win football games or it's to win on the recruiting trail. And I think this is a move directly impacting the recruiting trail. He can bring these young guys in, some of these top prospects that are being offered six figures, even seven figures in some instances, for NIL deals while they're 17, 18 years old, seniors in high school. He can bring them in. Obviously, their parents sometimes come with them. And if he sits them down and shows them, hey, look, here's what we have. Here's what we can help you with, help you, you know, manage, help you find opportunities, help you with, you know, financing things. You know, that's really going to stand out above maybe Jimbo Fisher in College Station and, you know, a booster or some company waving, you know, a check in their face saying, hey, here, just do something with this, you know, if you come here. So I think Nick Saban knows what he's doing. Everything he does is calculated. It clearly a byproduct of winning on the recruiting trail by utilizing this is going to be having players manage their money well, land great opportunities to either, you know, grow their personal brand or to help, you know, bring recognition to a brand that they would love to help out. Or, you know, it doesn't necessarily always mean Nike sponsorships or something. It's, you know, a lot of local businesses and maybe places in Tuscaloosa or back in their hometown that they're looking to help out. So I think it's a win-win for everybody involved within the Crimson Tide program. Outside the Crimson Tide program, they're probably scratching their heads thinking, why didn't we think of that first?
Yeah, it's not something that's exactly exploded all over the place. When you look at places like Texas A&M that have kind of gotten on top of these things, that's who you're directly competing against, even if Jimbo wants to cry about, you know, tampering and all that other sort of stuff. That is kind of where I want to go next, though. Obviously, there's been slow evolutions, and for a lot of people, it's not been fast enough, and I understand that. Both the NIL and the transfer portal were going to be broken the second that they were opened up, but that has more to do with the NCAA not getting on top of these things rather than the principle of these availabilities to the athletes. But in the grand scheme of things, are the positives of NIL and the transfer portal, or are they still outweighing the negatives, the things that are coming around with tampering and just straight up buying these players, which I guess there's a moral compass to that on some traditional level. But, the positives of NIL, transfer portal, still outweighing the negatives?
I'll start with NIL. And, you know, on the surface, it's great. You know, in my opinion, you have these players that are now able to either make money for themselves and their family, or, like I said, they can help out businesses. There's no longer these weird rules prohibiting players from accepting gifts or donations or payment for something. You know, while I was in college, Jacob, I mean, you know this, I was working. You know, I was working multiple jobs. And the fact that college athletes couldn't do the same, it was, you know, a little off. However, when you talk about buying players or waving a check in front of their face that they can get a hold of themselves if they go to, you know, whatever program that person who's signing the check wants them to go to, that's where we have issues. And people come to Alabama and they think, okay, well, they're going to pay their players. What happens is Alabama being such a massive brand, you know, the opportunities come knocking the second you become a part of the program, especially if you're a talented, you know, 4 or 5 star recruit whose name is being talked about by fans of the program before you even put on a uniform. You know, so those opportunities come when you have such a massive brand. Same thing goes with other programs. You look at Georgia, you look at Oregon, you mentioned Texas. Now, Texas A&M, on the other hand, if we want to bring up Jimbo, it's odd because Texas A&M, don't get me wrong, is not a small brand. However, the Aggies are not on the same level as the Alabamas, the Texases, in terms of brand recognition and desire to be associated with that brand or somebody that is from that brand, like a player specifically. So that's where I think, you know, Alabama probably is getting shorted in that respect. But if Alabama is getting shorted, so are all these other Power Five programs. So are all these other Group of Five programs that are missing out on these players that they might have had a chance to land otherwise. Now, I'm not going to sit here and play legislator and act like I know what would be best to implement in order to, you know, stop that from happening or to mitigate it at the least. So I do think the NCAA needs to step in and do something with respect to just paying players. But the transfer portal, on the flip side, and on, in my eyes, the better side, I don't have an issue with the transfer portal. I say this, you know, being an Alabama alum and somebody that follows Alabama football closely, but, you know, everybody's got a fair shake. It's like coaches have to re-recruit some of these guys. A lot of, you know, players that Alabama has landed through the transfer portal have originally held offers from Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide, and they just decided to commit elsewhere. And Nick Saban, all he has to do is really ring their phone again and say, hey, second chance, let's run it. And then there's other instances like Tyler Harrell, for example, from Louisville, the wide receiver Alabama just landed, where, you know, Alabama really didn't have any interest in him coming out of high school. He wasn't really recruited by SEC teams overall. I really think Tennessee might have been one of the only programs from the conference that extended an offer to him. And, of course, he went Louisville in the ACC. But Nick Saban, being the recruiter he is, like he runs the high school recruiting scene, he's also going to run the transfer portal. I don't know why this is coming as a shock to a lot of people, but I don't see what you can do to, you know, slow him down or stop him altogether unless you're going to out-recruit him, because he's not doing anything wrong. He's not violating any NCAA rules. He's literally just doing what he does best, which is recruiting. So, yeah, I think NIL needs to be, you know, fixed a little bit, and leave the transfer portal as is, because I don't know what else you can do to alter it.
I think the best thing you can do for the transfer portal is maybe make it fit on the calendar to where it makes sense and to where it's not impacting in the middle of seasons and so on. You know, you don't win the job out of camp. Like, now I'm in the transfer portal, now I'm not playing anywhere. Like, kind of the function of the transfer portal is falling in on itself in a way, because there's still like half the kids that go in there don't have anywhere to go on the backside of it. And I think that's dangerous. But again, it's not the player's fault. It's not the ideology behind the structures of NIL and transfer portal. It's the fact that the NCAA never did anything to help them exist properly in the first place. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about Herb Jones. Man, he has taken over these NBA playoffs. He's got the Suns tonight without Devin Booker. There's a real shot. The Pelicans are about to take out the number one seed in the West and do it without Zion Johnson, and do it behind the likes of a guy named Herb Jones in his rookie season.
I am loving. Listen, this is not a series I was interested in watching altogether. This was going to be one that I thought was going to end up like the Celtics and Nets series ended up last night, with a clean sweep. Instead, not only do we have some good basketball to watch, we have a series that's all tied up, heading back to Phoenix, and there's legitimate beef between a potential future Hall of Famer in Chris Paul and a former Alabama superstar in Herb Jones and some of these other super young Pelicans players. Listen, 10 p.m. the game tips off for me tonight, and I promise you, once that Heat game is over, I will be tuning into that and not leaving my spot on the couch, just for the sole purpose of watching Herb Jones get under the skin of Chris Paul and the rest of the Phoenix Suns.
I appreciate you letting me get by with the Zion Johnson slip instead of Zion Williamson.
I wasn't going to.
Because the guys behind the glass did not let me get by on that one. And just so happens that ESPN does a little skit thing on Zion Johnson, the offensive line prospect in this year's NFL
football
draft.
Football guy.
But here's the thing about Zion Johnson and why his name's more prevalent, because that guy's actually going to play in his rookie season. Actually going to help out his team. I started following the Pelicans because of Zion, and here we are. They're making a deep playoff push against the number one seed, and he ain't nowhere to be found. I don't care if it's management telling them to stay off the court. Be the man. Be the man and say, I'm playing, damn it. I'm playing.
The only thing that could make it better is if Kyra Lewis Jr. was back out on the court.
Yes.
And John Petty got promoted from the Birmingham squadron up to the big leagues. And,
he's begging. You see him on Twitter the other day? He said, I got to play for these Pelicans, man.
They're looking like they're having way too much fun, and he's out there balling out in Birmingham.
But, yeah.
You know, his time will come, I'm sure.
Won't be long. AJ Spur, at Spur FM on the Twitter account, site editor for the Roll Tide Wire, USA Today affiliate of the Alabama Crimson Tide. AJ, we always appreciate it, man. Take it easy. Enjoy the draft in the next 2 days.
Like always, thank you for having me, Jacob. I'll talk to you soon post-NFL draft.
Absolutely. We'll break down all the landing spots of our Crimson Tide players. We'll take a break. We'll close it down here on Off the Edge, Tide 100.9.
It's the Tide 100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
We'll forecast a clearing sky this afternoon. Much cooler today, the high 71. Clear tonight with the low at 43. For tomorrow and Thursday, a good supply of sunshine both days with a warming trend. The high tomorrow 76. For Wednesday, the high 81. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 65 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Follow Off the Edge on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for live streams and instant analysis. Off the Edge with Jacob Harrison continues.
All right, we'll close it down here on Off the Edge. The Jay Barker Show is coming up next. Friendly reminder, this Thursday, 6 p.m., myself, Mason Woods, J.R. Moore, Kim Rankin will be here. A lot of our interns will be here. Michael's the only one said he wouldn't come. We'll be here for the live draft show on Tide 100.9, cheering on our Alabama Crimson Tide guys and reacting to all the picks live here on the radio. So y'all be sure to join us for that. If you want to check out my full mock draft, it's over at Tide109.com. I strongly encourage you to do so. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll talk with Ryan Roberts of Rise and Draft. Get our last real look at the stock for all of our Crimson Tide prospects a day ahead of the NFL draft. Y'all take it easy. Have a fantastic Tuesday, everybody. Roll Tide.